Good afternoon, and thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very excited to have the opportunity to present my paper. And I'm also having many thoughts since yesterday about all the topics that were said here, and I will continue thinking about it at home. I would like to start my presentation by reading a quote from my field diary. One evening, during my field work in the Greek island of Irini, I was sitting in my room when my British roommate, Jane, burst in. She told me that the dog shelter worker had picked puppies out of the neighborhood dumpster. They're probably a week old, Jane figured. I was distressed hearing that. Jane said that she really wanted several of the puppies from the litter just for a little while in order to fight for their lives. They had to be fed around the clock, Jane explained, and requested my help. She was already preoccupied with her three children. I agreed to this responsibility for two reasons. First, I had an anthropological interest in this issue. And second, I just couldn't let them die. A day later, we were visited by Marina from Irini Animal Welfare Society. She entered my room with a crate and unidentified sounds coming out of it. I peered into it and saw four puppies. Stunned by the unique scene of those tender little beings, I admitted to Marina that I had never taken care of newborn puppies before. Without their mother, Marina explained, they had only a 30% chance of survival. She warned me not to get too emotionally attached to them, but they would be out of danger at the moment they will open their eyes. Marina gave me a tiny plastic bottle with warm milk and one of the puppies. You have to open his mouth, she explained. I did that, and the puppy began to suck. It was an extraordinary moment for me. I felt clueless about how to do it correctly. Later that day, standing next to the new whining box, Jane and I stared at each other. It all seems so strange and new. We agreed that it was the beginning of an experience that will continue in unknown ways. I argued that this vignette is an example of a meaningful social bond that comes about between a newborn and its main caregivers, meaning it is an attachment process. In this case, one that evolves between human caregivers and newborn puppies. I propose that this attachment process is not merely a psychological one, but it is as well a model of social interaction. Inspired by semiotic materialism, I claim that this social bond is based on verbal and non-verbal communication and includes mutual influence and shared learning. Furthermore, the outcome of this process is the social construction of familial belonging, and by that I mean it is the new social network that undermines the human-animal dichotomy. I will explore ahead the roles of material interactions, feelings, and bodies of different heterogenic entities through four stories. But first, I would like to dwell a bit on human-pet attachment in anthropological and sociological literature. Vast of this literature focuses on the representation of dogs as family members in Western societies. For example, Hirschman claimed that dog caregivers anthropomorphized their dogs as maintaining physical appearance of a baby, and back in Catcher showed that 70% of pet caregivers perceive their animals as children. Recent studies on human-animal relations propose to shift the gaze from representation to actual relationships intertwined between humans and animals. In my talk, I wish to amplify this corpus of knowledge and present material semiotic events and their outcome, a familial network knitted between different species. However, first I would like to elaborate on my field work in Irini that was conducted from 2010 to 2013. The findings presented here are part of my doctorate ethnographic project on interactions between humans and dogs in the island during the Greek economic crisis. Located in the Kyklade, Irini has 14,000 inhabitants, primarily Greeks and European expats, and a home to presumably thousands of dogs that live in Irinians' houses or farms or in the dog's shelter. Henceforth, I will explore the interaction between human caregivers and puppies during 3 weeks until the last puppy opened his eyes. And I'm telling you already that finally they survive. I will do so by depicting four stories describing different elements of material interaction in the attachment process. And I will start with the first story, familial specificities. At first, Jen and I thought that the best way for us to survive the nights was to wake up every 3 hours and to feed the puppies. Nonetheless, right away we found out that it wouldn't be our choice. The puppies woke up whenever they chose, usually in intervals of 2 hours or less, and whined. Every whining marked the beginning of a 40-minute nursing and cleaning ritual. One that includes, among others, the following action: heating up some water in a pot and pouring it into a plastic bottle, adding an exact measuring of spoonful of puppy's milk powder and mixing it well. The puppies didn't know how to urine by themselves, and usually are being encouraged by their mother how to do so. Hence, before we continued with the nursing ritual, we dipped some cotton in a glass, you can see it there. We dipped some cotton in a glass of water and moistened their urinary organ. They did, however, defecate on their own in their sleeping box. Therefore, we constantly had to wash their blankets all the time. The washing machine just worked and worked. The nursing began, and one of the puppies was quiet now, but there were three more to go. When the night shift ended, the replacement arrived, either Jane or me. We updated each other regarding the condition of each one of the puppies. In those first days, they seemed well enough. I obviously didn't know exactly what well enough was, but they were still alive. On one of the evenings, Jane chuckled and said, quote, "You and I, we're literally a married couple with four children." She smiled and continued, quote, "A friend of mine that visited me today told me that I sound like a mother who talked only about poo and food," end of quote. I contend that this step of attachment empirically demonstrates that the care we provided at this stage was instrumental, repetitive one. Our constant fear for their fate led us to share information all the time with each other. How much they ate, how frequently, for how long, the right angle to hold the bottle, and so on. In their article about disability, Moser and Law show, among others, how complex use of a sophisticated wheelchair grants leave the wheelchair user with environmental control. For example, how pressing buttons, joysticks, and switches in new and combined ways leads to new results. The next phase includes control of specificities that provided Liv the ability to move around with her wheelchair. In our case, within a few days, we and the puppies developed different skills and learned how to combine between them, such as how to open the mouth alone and to eat, and how to hold the puppy and to feed. Having mastered this expertise of nursing on the one hand, and the ability to eat on the other hand, enabled us, the caregivers, to turn our attention to additional specificities associated with touch. Each puppy being nursed extended his front legs, touched the caregiver's palm, moved the paws, and squeezed the caregiver's hand gently. Marina explained that by doing this action, The puppies were actually squeezing the nursing mother's nipple to induce a flow of milk. Each puppy who did that gave me a warm and pleasant feeling, a new and addictive touch. I felt its tiny claws, and looking down, I sensed the cooperation between the hand that's doing the feeding and the hand that is doing the holding. Those were very intimate moments. Shapiro argued that touch plays a key role in human-animal attachment while communicating feelings. In my story, after performing the nursing ritual several times and becoming materially skillful at that, we began to feel. The warm feeling that flooded us due to the shared touching was another dimension of this interaction. I propose that the feeling carried two meanings: the physical sensation of touch and the experiences that this touch created, such as sense of warmth. This warmth, accompanied by the sound of suckling from the bottle, wrapped us with calmness and serenity that we felt missing when the nursing ritual ended. I move to the third story, the body. 3 days after the puppies were brought to us, we began giving them names that reflected their bodily traits and behavior. The two males were Duster. This puppy resembled the Bernese Mountain Dog on a British TV series, apparently. And Buster. I named the round female Constantina after a beefy guy I know from the island. And the large white female puppy was named Guzzla, since she guzzled the milk greedily. Even though people preached us against naming, saying to us it's too early, who knows if they will survive, we sensed that it was too late. We already felt the beginning of a physical and emotional bond with beings that were differentiated in performance and their bodily builds. A week went by, the puppies' bodies were growing, and hence the nursing ritual took more than an hour now. In contrast to the puppy's development, we, the caregivers, were fading away physically and mentally. We were tired. Jane and I wore pajamas most of the time and looked like a worked-out mops. Both of us had lost weight as well. Jane told me that she had stomach problems again in the past few days, as the puppies had had, and commented, quote, "I'm swollen as if I'm pregnant," end of quote. In addition, we started giving them more space to move on our bodies. On one morning, for example, Jane nursed the puppies while I was lying on the sofa next to her. Each time she finished feeding one of them, she placed the puppy on me. I no longer cared that they stunk or that they pressed their faces into mine, because we already had much in common. I fell asleep on the sofa, sucked dry, and embraced on all sides. I suggest that those examples indicate that the bodies of the partners in the interaction formed sensational and bodily encounters that played a role in creating the category of family belonging. This bonding affected the participant's body, and it was interpreted as signifiers of motherhood to newborn entities that were given names. In addition, the motionless posture of the caregiver bodies as the puppies settled on them enriched the mobility between the beings. Now move to the fourth story, mutual gaze. About 2 weeks later, all the puppies finally opened their eyes. Jane told me, in reference to Buster, that, quote, "When he opened his eyes, he entered my heart," end of quote. I smiled and nodded in agreement. I also felt how the gaze they directed into my eyes stirred an inner sense of love towards them and a sense of mutual belonging. Reingold emphasized the importance of visual contact as an act of sociability. Indeed, the new mutual gaze between the puppies and us was a meaningful moment in this bonding process. First, it indicated that the puppy survived the critical period with our powder milk and our treatment. Second, the puppy's gaze into our direction intensified our emotions towards them and was interpreted by us, the caregivers, as the final transformation of the puppies into subjects that investigated us. And I move to the discussion. This lecture focuses on family in the making, a familial network that contains human and non-human entities that is created during an attachment process. According to Moser and Law, every disability also accumulates potential ability. The outcome depends, among other things, on material interaction with different heterogenic entities in the net. In the current case, the initial step of attachment started with a human action, collecting four new born puppies from the dumpster. The first moments were performed in a one-sided manner, humans feeding puppies. Yet, the first interaction between the entities was swiftly followed by another, when the puppies issued stimulus, which is whining in the box. They engaged the caregivers and brought another bottle of milk to their lips. The first thread of material semiotics was weaved. The work of creating knots of attachment was intensified by mastering material specificities that the caretakers perceived as performing maternal and newborn actions. The shared touch modified the attachment and stretched a new kind of thread, the need for sensational feeling of warmth and security. The mutual change of bodies was viewed by the caregivers as another outcome of mothers and babies. Finally, the mutual gaze ensured the flow and assured the interlocking of humans and non-human puppies in a shared unit of a family. Following Latour, I showed how new situations may lead to new associations. In this case, an effort to redefine them in familiar sociocultural terms such as family belonging. But listening to all the lectures the last days, I wonder about the meaning of using human language in order to interpret these kind of activities. And I wonder if it is anthropomorphism or that we just don't have another choice or another term in order to understand what's going on here. Moreover, redefining the social by researching the daily interactions and performances that are socially constructed as familial relations undermines the human-animal binary. Therefore, this case exemplifies how the post-human theory occurs in reality when a hybrid unit of different species is created. In the next stage of the process, after the puppies open their eyes, a more intricate social network began to operate, one that included Jane's dog and children and other humans. Now the material interactions among all those beings evolved into new social categories, but we will leave it to another lecture. Thank you.